So we have two more weeks in this particular period of For the Night lessons before we swap over tonight and one more. So we're finishing up the apologetics class, and then all the new stuff will start September 1, basically. On Sunday nights, Bruce will be down the hall doing evangelism, and we want to make sure you're aware of that and be thankful and thoughtful of that. And here we'll have a class on prayer. So those are a couple of options that'll be on Sunday nights. Also remember, there's two Wednesday night options. I know there's a clipboard in the foyer that if you're interested in the one down the hall, you can sign up on that. Tonight, we're going to do kind of a two-part lesson just to finish up our apologetics. I picked out what I thought was the toughest question for us to answer about God. I thought that'd be a good place to end our apologetics lesson. We looked at kind of positive reasons to believe in God. Here's a reason why you wouldn't believe in God. What would Christians say to that? And it's the one called the problem of evil. Or sometimes you'll hear it, the problem of suffering. And the question, if you want to look at it kind of analytically, it looks like this, but we usually don't think of it this way, but this is the gist of it. If God is infinitely wise, then he would know how to stop evil. If God is infinitely powerful, then he would be able to stop evil. If God is infinitely good, then he would want to stop evil. But since evil exists in our world, there must not be an infinitely wise, infinitely powerful, infinitely good God. Okay. When you first hear it, it sounds pretty daunting, because it all sounds pretty true. I mean, okay, we do believe God is infinitely wise. You're not going to get any debate in a church about that one. God is infinitely powerful, in the sense that God can do all the things that God can do. Does that make sense? So we're not going to debate, can God make a round square? Right? We're not going to have that kind. Can God make a weight too heavy for him to lift? Right? Those kind of riddles we're not interested in. God can do all the things that can logically be done. All right? I mean, all the things that can imaginably be done and some that can't be imagined. So yeah, infinitely powerful. I'm fine with that. The third one I'm probably going to come back to, but in general we would agree if God is infinitely good, he must not like evil. And certainly when you read the scriptures, God is not on the side of evil. He's against it. Okay. And yet, evil exists in this world. Is there any debate about that? Nope. So this sounds like a pretty daunting argument to the Christian. And I'll say this, of all the atheistic arguments, I think this is their best one because it hits so close to home, because it takes what we believe about God and sets that up against what we actually experience and says they don't match up. You see, where's your God? So this is probably the most daunting. I will say it tickles me a little when atheists kind of act like they thought this up yesterday, right? Like this is a new question. This is a new idea someone had. Hey, Ben, have you ever thought about this? And I want to say everyone since Adam has thought about this. This is the oldest question. Quite literally, it's what we're here for. If you read your Bible, what is the Bible about? As much as anything, God, man, what separates God and man, and what God's doing about it. The question over and over again is, what's God doing about it? That's the question of evil, right? There is evil in this world. We've noticed. What was the psalm we just read? Psalm 102. Had that person noticed that there were bad things going on? Yeah. And his question was, okay, God, hear me and do something. So, I mean, quite literally, it's the question that the Bible is based on. Jesus is, in Christianity, our answer to that question in the big sense. Not, we're going to talk about that today necessarily, but in the big sense, God says, Jesus is what I am doing about evil. Right. So that's kind of the Bible's answer. But again, I just kind of get tickled when someone acts like they're the first one who ever thought of this. They're the first one who ever noticed people suffer and God allows that to happen. Now, Christians have been wrestling with this for a very long time. The Psalms are just full of it. So let me start. We're going to do this in two halves tonight. We're just going to think about the problem. Stare at the ceiling and think a little bit and ask ourselves, is there anything we're missing here? Is there any question we should be answering? And then next week, we're going to say, how does the Bible answer this question? I just said the Bible is all about this. So how does the Bible answer this question? We'll do that next week. First of all, is just an observation. Are we allowed to call it a problem? Ravi Zacharias has made the comment that a problem is something that you can kind of coldly, analytically hold out at arm's length and look at and try to fix. Okay, if this clicker was broken, I could say, well, let me think about how a clicker works and try to repair it. If you get a math problem, you're going to put the equation down on a page and stand back at arm's length and say, let me try to solve this math problem. You get a science problem, you're going to get a beaker full of whatever it is you're curious about and hold it at arm's length and experiment on it and say, what's this? Is that what suffering is like? No. Suffering is something we're part of, right? We have skin in the game. In a sense, no one can talk about suffering in a coldly logical, dispassionate way because we're suffering. So tonight, I've got some logical answers to the problem of suffering, but if you're actually suffering, you don't care about any of them, and I wouldn't dare to give them to you. If you've just lost a child, I don't say, let me give you Plantinga's free will defense for the problem of evil. You'd punch me in the face, and you'd be right. When someone's actually suffering, what do you say? I'm so, so sorry. Because that's the best we can do, right? So it's not a problem, like a coldly analytical problem, although we're going to try to treat it that way tonight. It's a mystery that we are in the middle of, right? We are partakers in this problem, right? We're part of it. So we have to think of it and remember it that way, that there's none of us who aren't, we don't have something at stake. A lot of people ask this question, and before you're done answering, they get angry. How can you believe that? And the reason that there's anger attached, because we're all suffering, right? But that's part of our human experience in some way. Another issue at stake in this particular question is it seems to assume a lot of things about God. I told you I'd come back to that third point. If God is infinitely good, he would want to stop evil. I'm pretty okay with that statement. There's one word in there that bugs me a little. It's the word want. What does God want to do? How does God make a decision? Does anyone know that? Yeah, it is a bit up to him. It seems to assume that I could kind of psychoanalyze God and say, well, here's what we're probably saying is, well, this is what I would do. If I was infinitely powerful and infinitely wise, I would, you know, fix everything. That's what I would do. And we kind of assume something about God that I'm not sure we can prove. So let me just, for the sake of making a point, I'm going to list a whole bunch of questions on the screen and answer none of them. And my point is just, there are things about the way God does things that we maybe don't know. And this question seems to kind of assume that I could stand back and say, this is what God would do if he was good. He would want to do this. Want's a psychology word, right? That's not a logical term. So let me just give you some example. Can I necessarily understand how God would make this decision? And how do you make a decision? The people in this room don't all make decisions the same way. Husbands and wives don't make decisions the same way. Let me ask you this one, and I'll duck. Husbands, do you understand how your wife makes a decision? Wives, do you understand how your husband makes a decision? But you're completely confident you know exactly what God would do in a given situation. You've got him figured out. So my thought is maybe it's not quite that simple, you know, that he is another person from us, infinitely greater, we say, than us. So ask the question, how would he make that decision? Well, that's a good question. Can I necessarily know all the data available to God for making this decision? So based on what I know, here's what I would do. Does God, according to Scripture, know things that I don't? Nearly everything that I don't is what God knows. Can I tell my football story? This is one of the fun. This is one of those preacher stories that David, I'm fairly certain, is fabricated. There's nothing true about it. But preachers always say, "Well, one time," and this is what happened. There was a team, and it was the last game of the season, and they had to get a win to make it to the playoffs. And so the score was very close, but the home team was up by 2 points. Okay? All they had to do, they had the football, they're up by 2 points. All they have to do is take a knee and run out the clock, and they win the game by 2 points. And the coach calls in the play, and the quarterback turns around, runs to his own end zone, and kneels down and takes a safety, giving the other team 2 points and sending it into overtime. And the home crowd is losing their mind. There's a mob forming to kill the coach. But the game goes on. It goes into overtime. They score 7 more points, and they win the game. And the parents are ready to kill him afterwards, and they say, "What happened?" He said, "We would have been in a tie for the playoffs with our current score. We needed 7 more points to break the tie, and so we went to overtime to get it." Well, the parents are okay then, right? So now we're going to the playoffs. My point on this kind of ridiculous story is, can you imagine a scenario where someone has to make a decision based on information you don't have, and when they make that decision, it seems completely backwards from what they should do, but is actually the right decision? And our answer to that is, have you ever even watched a sporting game? Right? In every sport, the guys sitting in the armchairs yell at the people on the field, "Why don't you do this?" And you don't have all the information they have. Sometimes they're just making a bad call. But sometimes they actually know something you don't, right? And this is what we do. So is it possible God has information that we don't? Not only is it possible, it's certain. If God is anything that he says he is, he has some information we don't. So, again, that's tough. Can evil produce good? And can God use evil to produce good? Is that part of his decision-making process? Now, let me be careful. The question is not, can God do evil? The question is, if somebody does evil, can God make good come of it? And Scripture emphatically says, yeah, quite often. The worst things humans ever did, putting Jesus to death, is the thing God made the most good out of. Okay, so my point is that something that would factor into this decision that we might not have thought of? Yeah. Does God call evil everything we think of as evil? In our current society, it's almost backwards, actually. We get it all wrong. But even for a Christian person, are you sure that you can identify everything in the world that God ought to snap his fingers and get rid of? Are you sure? And when we talk about human suffering, I stub my toe and it hurts. Is that something God should get rid of or not? Should he get rid of toes or walls that we can stub our toe on? Or should he just make it when we stub our toes it doesn't hurt? All right, my point is, do you even know what you're talking about when you say, "I know what's wrong with this world and I can tell God how to fix it"? The answer is, you might not. You might be completely wrong about that. There are some things that are evil. And here's the more tricky question. If God got rid of all the things that were evil, would you be around to enjoy it? Okay. We might be one of them, right? That's a fair question. We have not made the world a better place, us humans. And so if he's just snapping his fingers, he did that once, remember? And it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. And he got rid of nearly all the things that were evil. Do we think that's a good solution? God didn't even think that was a good solution. After it was over, it worked so well, he promised he'd never do it again. Okay? So, do we know what evil is? What would God do in a situation where the greatest amount of good would be produced in a situation that includes some amount of evil? I'm very cautious. I don't like choose the greater good or do evil that good comes of it kind of arguments. But I just have to ask the question, might God allow us to suffer some pain in order to bring about something good? Do I know for certain whether he would do that or not? Doctors do. Doctors are perfectly fine to cause you pain if it heals you of something that's going to kill you. Okay. So is God okay with doing something like that? It's certainly possible. Is it possible that there is at least one valid reason out there of which we are unaware? That's kind of the sum of all of these questions, that morally justifies the existence of evil. So my first point about this question is, it seems really airtight until you start kind of poking at it a little bit, and we've assumed some things about God in the question. Basically, we just put ourselves in the place of God and said, I'm clearly a good person. Now, if I was all-powerful and all-wise like God, this is what I would do. Why doesn't God do that? Okay. And that's a little bit dangerous as a way of asking that question. So let's look at some logical answers to the problem. Are there anything we could say that we might want to think about when we talk about evil? First of all, what is evil? We're going to figure out what we're talking about. And to do that, I'm going to ask you, what is evil? Question mark. James. People who are driving slower than me. No. Okay. Well, I think we're done here. I think we've covered it. No. What is evil? So, a fair point. Is it people who do something I don't like? What is evil? Anyone have a definition? Jim? So, okay, one question would be, does it have to be part of kind of my character or my regular routine of life? Is an oops, I made a mistake kind of thing an evil? Is that kind of what you're getting at? Is it necessarily one failure, or is it a whole kind of character, a habit of failure? Yeah. Okay, so habit, evil might involve, you know, habits and character. Okay, what is evil, Matthew? Profoundly immoral. Where did you get that? Is that off Wikipedia? Okay, Google. Okay, Google says profoundly immoral and malevolent. Okay, what do those words mean? Malevolent means evil. And it depends on who you ask. So, not making funny. That's exactly right. That our terminology, if my point is to disprove God, and I'm not interested in what this book says, what is evil? I'm already at a little bit of a disadvantage because I get to use great words like malevolent. I think we should all say malevolent all the time. But in the end of the day, what does that mean? Right? I don't know. Okay. So let's take a look at it. What is evil? Is evil even a thing? Is darkness a thing? Can you give me a cup full of darkness? Is darkness a measurable quantity? No, darkness is just the place where there isn't any light. And so it's possible that evil's like that. Evil's just a place or a person or a situation where God's goodness isn't. Maybe because they threw God out, which is what people of bad character do, right? They've made themselves a place where God isn't, or they made a choice where God isn't, or something like it. Maybe. Is evil real on its own, or is it the absence of good? What's interesting is usually when we're having this discussion, people aren't even talking about any of the things you're mentioning. They're talking about human suffering, people feeling pain, people aging, people having a flood in Louisiana. That's the kind of evil that people usually mean. How does God let bad things happen, like a flood or a tornado? See? So my point is that this is a difficult word to define right off the bat. And you're a group of people who I assume have thought about it, and you kind of kicked it around and said, well, you know. Okay. Now I'll take away the Bible and try to define it. It gets worse. So what I'm going to do is try to break it into three different categories, because preachers do everything in threes. Number one, we're going to talk about moral evil done by a person. So I choose to kill someone. Would that be a kind of evil? Yeah, a moral evil. Second, we're going to talk about the suffering that comes as the result of moral evil. So, I become intoxicated. I get behind the wheel of a car and get on the interstate, and someone else dies. Now, the person that actually suffered didn't do anything bad, but they suffered as a consequence of a decision I made. Okay, so I've got moral evil, suffering that happens to somebody else because I did something evil. And then the third category we're going to call natural evil, because I don't have a better word for it. Neither does anybody else. You know what your insurance policy calls it when something like this happens? Act of God. It's still in the literature. You know, in courtrooms across the country. I mean, it's still in the contracts. If a tornado knocks down your house, it says, this covers everything except, well, acts of God. If the lightning beam comes directly down from heaven and explodes just your house, insurance says, we're not sure we're going to cover that. Okay. So natural evil, what about when a flood happens? What about when a tornado happens? Who sinned to make a tornado? Who's sinning in Louisiana right now that making the flood? A friend of mine, John Dobbs, is a preacher down in Louisiana, and he's praying real hard, you know. What's he doing wrong? Why isn't the flood going away? So that's a natural evil. Okay. So let's start with moral evil. Can God, if God exists, wouldn't he prevent people from doing evil things? Why does God let people go out and murder somebody else? Do murders happen in our world? They do. When the guy's getting ready to pull the trigger, why doesn't God hit the button and just stop that from happening? Why does God allow people to make terrible choices? If you're a Christian, it's even worse. What is the ultimate consequence of a life of sin and evil? Okay, eternal damnation. Does God want anyone to go to there? According to the scriptures, he doesn't want anybody to do that. So why doesn't he just not let us sin? Okay. The first problem, again, I'm just going to bring up one more time. Without God, who we're trying to disprove in the first place, I don't know what a moral evil is. Why is it wrong to murder somebody if there's no God? Why do you care if anyone steals from someone else if there is no God? I don't have an answer to that question. But the second one is more interesting, I think. What is the alternative? How do I prevent people from making morally evil choices? Let's make it real simple. Let's take it to your kids. You have kids. Let's say you do. You had them maybe at some point. When they were little, you had the option of keeping them, when they were young, very young, from making morally evil choices. How did you do that? You lock them in their room, right? Yeah, I mean, that's you have more power than a child does. And so if you want to keep a child from doing something bad, you know what you do? You just make them stop doing it. Okay? So now apply that to our question. Could God, who is more powerful, make us stop doing evil? What would happen when that happens? There wouldn't be any evil. There wouldn't be any evil in the world at all. None whatsoever. Zero. Matthew? We would not like God very much. How do your parents... I'm sorry, someone... How do you respond to your parents when they take something away from you that you thought was a good idea? You're super happy about that, aren't you? Okay. Lucas, Calvin had a ball this morning, and it was making an enormous amount of noise, and that's why he had it. He was on tile. And he thought this was great. Look, I can drop it, and it bounces. Bonk, 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 bonk. Bonk, bonk, bonk. Okay, after a few times, that becomes irritating, so we take the ball away, right? He was disappointed. He was unhappy. What was your point? There we go. That to me is the big problem, is the only way, what do you do with your child? You're actually taking away their power of choice. Calvin's dropping a ball, and so I just take the ball away. Can he drop the ball anymore? He's not obeying me. He just doesn't have a ball to drop. I simply took away that choice. And when you have little kids, that's what you're supposed to do. That's called good parenting. If they run into the street, you don't say, "Let me appeal to their sense of reason. Come back." No, you grab them, you scream, and you get them out of the way of the cars, right? You do whatever it is you have to do to keep them safe when they're little like that. Of course you do. You take away their choices. Calvin, we live upstairs, and Calvin likes to throw things over the balcony, the gate. He thinks that's hilarious to see him drop. Downstairs neighbors don't think it's quite as funny. We're eventually going to put up some kind of mesh around it where he can't get things through it, right? We're going to take away that choice. Would it be good if God took away our choice? I'm going to say no. I'm going to say that would not be a good thing. I think here's the difference between us and kind of our Calvinistic neighbors. If you're a Calvinist, then humans don't have any free will anyway, and you're in a lot of trouble with this one. I really think the Calvinist has a big problem with the problem of evil. They have to say, God never did give you choice, and you are doing evil to the glory of God. That's one of the requirements of that point of view, and that is a problem for me, for anyone. But for those of us who believe in free will, we think free will is a very good thing. Free will allows us to love God, and that's a good thing. You don't love God if he makes you love God. That's not actually loving God, right? That we get to freely choose to adore him. That's a beautiful thing. We get to freely choose to do good things to each other and love other people. Those are all things that are possible when you have free will. Okay, so let me just give you the fancy philosophical quote that says the same thing. This is Alvin Plantinga, and he's smarter than I am, so I'll let him say it. He says, God's creation of persons with morally significant free will is something of tremendous value. God could not eliminate much of the evil and suffering in this world without thereby eliminating the greater good of having created persons with free will, with whom he could have relationships and who were able to love one another and do good deeds. But the only way that we can think of this logically, that you could make someone not able to do a bad thing, is to take away their choice to do things at all. As long as there's a choice to do something, one of the things you could do is bad. And God decided, and here we're getting back to God deciding things, God apparently decided that us making choices was a very good thing. Even to the extent that knowing we would make bad choices, and I'll go a step further because we're a Christian group, knowing that those bad choices would cost the blood of his son, he still thought giving us choice was a good thing. That's how much he wants us to have the freedom to love each other and love him and to make good choices, rather than compelling us to do it kind of robotically. He could have treated them like I'm going to treat Calvin, right? He could have built a really big fence around the tree. Yeah. Instead, he gives them a choice. And they made a bad choice, as we all have. But that choice apparently was important. He didn't build a fence around it. He could have. Okay. This is actually the end of the discussion, in a sense. We're going to have more to say for the next 10 minutes. But in a sense, once you agree that God gives us free will, that's kind of the end of the debate. Let me give you a quote from J.L. Mackey. He's one of three or four of the most famous and influential atheists of the 20th century. And here's what he said about what Plantinga just said. He says, since this defense is formally, that is logically possible, and its principle involves no real abandonment of our ordinary view of the opposition between good and evil, here's the big point, we can concede that the problem of evil does not, after all, show that the central doctrines of theism are logically inconsistent with one another. And he goes on to say, but whether this offers a real solution of the problem is another question. He says, I don't know if I like it or not. He says, but once you encounter the possibility that God gives us choice, he says, that actually ends the discussion. He's an atheist. This was his favorite argument. And he published a book in 1982 and said, yeah, okay, they win that one. How often do you think that happens? The most influential atheist in the country says, okay, you're right about that one. I don't like it, though. That's a rare thing, but that's how good the free will argument is. Once you are okay with the idea of God giving us choice, kind of the end of the discussion, in a sense, and atheists recognize that. Don't have to like it. You can say, what do I think of a God who gives me the freedom to destroy myself? Right? You don't have to like it. But it is a reasonable explanation of why bad things happen in the world. Questions about that and what we're trying to say about God giving us choice and how a lot of evil happens because we make bad choices? Okay. Yeah. So the question is, what is free will going to look like in American culture? Because we're on a pretty bad skid right now, it seems like. There are some bright spots that I can look at. I think, personally, we're going to end up winning the abortion discussion. I think that's going to change. People my age and younger are more pro-life than their parents, statistically. And the reason for that, I think, is ultrasounds. That's a technology that the previous generation didn't have. Once you see that baby, it's a lot harder to have an abortion. So that's something that is changing for the better. But by and large, do I think America is going to be an overwhelmingly Christian-oriented country in 10 or 15 years? I don't think so. It may happen again, but I don't think it's going to be soon. Just my personal think so. I think Christians are going to have to get used to being in a minority position, which is a position that Christianity used to always be in, but it's been a long time since we've been there. In America, we kind of got used to a lot of people think this way, and it's going to be the other way for a while. I think Christians can turn it around, but it's going to be hard before we get there, would be my answer. Yeah.
And World War II, major wars, that seemed to form
the
depression.
When things are bad, people get religious. Yeah. So it could be that our current trajectory will make such a train wreck of our country, people will get religious again. That's one of the nice, this is going to sound funny, it's one of the nice things about evil. There's nice things about evil. It's one of the good things about evil is that evil kind of destroys itself if you give it enough rope. And that might happen. Yeah. The book of Judges seems to sound familiar to that. Yeah, that it gets better and it gets worse and it gets better and it gets worse. Okay. Suffering as the result of moral evil. God has to give us free will so we can make choices. We covered that one. But couldn't God make it where whenever you try to do something bad, it doesn't happen? So pulling a gun at you and pull the trigger intending to kill you, and God turns it into one of those little funny clown guns where the flag pops out instead. No murders. Anytime you try to hurt someone, the little flag point, pop, bang. Could God do that? Technically, yeah, I suppose so. In fact, I can even give you a biblical example. Do we remember the story of Balaam? Balaam was a prophet who was trying to curse God's people, and the scripture says God made it so that every time he tried to curse, blessings came out. There's an example, literally, of God saying, in this instance, no, you don't get what you want. I'm just simply taking it away. That is no longer an option for you. You open your mouth, and you try to make a sound that's a curse, and only good things are going to come out. Okay? So yeah, it's possible. What would be the problem with that? Well, first thing, is there a choice without a consequence? Is there such a thing? Has God really given us a choice if there's no consequences for it? Did Balaam have a choice that day? Not really. I mean, God had taken away part of his choice. He'd said, I'm not going to give you that choice. That's no longer an option for you. If God says, I'm going to give you choice, but if you make the wrong one, absolutely nothing happens. Is that a choice at all? Yeah, parents, think about it with your kids. Did you sometimes give them choices that weren't really choices? Yeah, it's called good parenting. Where you say, you can clean your room, or you can clean your room, right? And yeah, you have a choice, congratulations, but there's not an option. Or, you can clean your room, or I'm going to punish you. And then what happens after you're done punishing them? They still have to go clean their room. Right. So there really wasn't a choice. It was actually just, you're going to go do it. Easy way or the hard way, it's going to happen. So could God just do that for every moral choice? When you try to tell a lie, the sound just doesn't even come out of your throat. Is that possible? I don't think that would be a choice in a very real way. If people continue to treat you that way as an adult, as a kid, it makes sense. If you're an adult and people treated you that way, would you say that you had choices? If no consequences ever happened, no matter what you did, that's not much of a choice. What about evil thoughts? Could God keep me from thinking evil? Now he's altering my brain. I mean, now we're back to that free will problem. If he's taking away even the consequence of my evil thoughts, if I'm thinking really bad things about Edwin right now, and God just, you know, goes into my brain and takes it out, that doesn't sound like free will to me. What about nature and life? What would they look like if God subverts all human choices that are bad? You know, the only way we get wrong in this world is that things are kind of orderly. You drop this remote and it falls every time. Gravity works the same every time. God has the power to change some of those things, and he does. Jesus walked on water one time. But what would happen in a world where sometimes if you stepped out into a lake, you floated and sometimes you didn't? Sometimes the sun rose in the east, sometimes... Well, where God changed things based on what it was going to do for your day. God knew in advance you were going to get a sunburn today, and so he made it so the sun wouldn't rise. Again, I'm thinking we wouldn't like that either. Here's C.S. Lewis asked this question. He says, "We can perhaps conceive of a world in which God corrected the results of this abuse of free will by his creature at every moment, so that a wooden beam became soft as grass when it was used as a weapon, and the air refused to obey me if I attempted to set it up in the sound waves that carry lies or insults." Yeah, I can imagine that, he says. But such a world would be one in which wrong actions were impossible, and in which, therefore, freedom of the will would be void. Try to exclude the possibility of suffering, which the order of nature and the existence of free wills involve, and you'll find that you have excluded life itself. You live in a really funny world, where if you go swimming and you jump into the lake, you sink. But if you're trying to commit suicide, you jump in your lake and you just land on the top. Right? The world is now in chaos. I mean, there are no rules, nothing makes any sense, and you have no say in it on top of that. It's a really weird world. And I think if we existed in that world, we wouldn't like it. We would say God is treating us like infants. And we'd be mad about it. We'd be indignant. So instead, God treats us like adults. We do stupid things like adults do. And then we say, why did God let us do that? See the problem? Free will is really, it kind of goes back to that to me. Yep. No, you couldn't. Human progress comes to a standstill because you can't even know how the world's going to work today because it depends on what the guy next to you is going to do because God's going to change the world where he can't do anything dumb. I mean, what a mess. That's a crazy world. That's not a world that makes any sense. You couldn't do science, technology, nothing dependable. And that kind of leads to the third one that's related. Suffering as the result of nature. Couldn't God at least get rid of suffering produced by his own creation? Tornadoes and floods and terrible things like that. Couldn't God at least take care of that stuff? But again, if we ask some questions, it kind of starts to fall apart. The Bible claims, I know this is a Bible answer, but the Bible claims that at least some of that is still caused by humans. Not you directly. Where does human mortality, thorns and thistles and human hardship, and pain in childbirth come from, according to Genesis 3? A human choice. Right? Not all of it comes from your personal choice, but somebody made a choice. And according to Genesis 3, a lot of bad things happen because somebody else made a choice way, way, way back there. And we still have some of the consequences of that. Can you have the consequences of somebody else's choice? All the time. In November, at least half of the country is going to say that other half made a terrible choice. It's the way it's going to go. And you're going to be stuck with the consequences of people's choice. That's just the way the world works. If God wants to give us free will, he has to give us all free will, not just me. Okay. So, turns out, yeah, some bad things do come from choices. Others have to do with laws of nature. The same thing that makes rain, which we like a lot, makes tornadoes, which we don't like as much. Right? That it's the same natural processes. The sun gives you a sunburn. Could God make the sun where it didn't give you a sunburn? Yeah, I guess he could turn it off when you want to go sunbathing. But I think the world's going to be a mess when God turns off the sun. So there's going to be some angry farmers who say, where did the sun go? See the problem? That it's more involved than that, and we just don't have enough information to look at it and say, oh, clearly God could fix that. Why don't they fix that? It's the constant complaint of people who don't know what's going on, of somebody who does. Why don't they fix that? I'm out of time, but let me just run down these three real fast from Richard Swinburne, because he's pretty smart and I like him. He says, natural evil might, in some cases, accomplish a good. Natural evil motivates us to understand the natural world. So we can do science because we're curious how the world works, and we do meteorology to figure out why tornadoes happen, and we learn things. So there's some good that comes out of that. But he says natural evil also provides opportunities for virtues like courage and compassion, promoting human growth. Can you have courage in a world where nothing bad ever happens? I don't think you can. Can you have compassion in a world where it doesn't cost you anything? I'm not sure that's compassion. So it could be to have the good things God wants us to have, he has to put some of those other things in the world as an alternative. Okay. Next week, we're going to look at some of the biblical answers. Some of them will line up pretty well with what we've been asking about tonight. Some of them will be a little more challenging. So next week. Thanks.